ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ईदृस्तं भृत्य विद्रास्यसि रूपं चिदं पौरुषं ज्ञानतिष्ण्यं न प्रत्यक्षं मां सदृशं कृषिष्ठा।
My Lord, because you dispel all the fear of your devotees, I request you to save us and give us protection from the terrible fear of Kamsa. Your form as Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is approached by yogis in meditation. Please make this form invisible to those who see with material eyes. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The word dhyana dhishnyam is significant in this verse, because the form of Lord Vishnu is meditated upon by yogis. Yana vishishta tad gatena manasa pashanti yam yogina. Devaki requested the Lord, who had appeared as Vishnu, to conceal that form, for she wanted to see the Lord as an ordinary child. Like a child appreciated by persons who have material eyes, Devaki wanted to see whether the Supreme Personality of Godhead had actually appeared, or she was dreaming the Vishnu form. If Kamsa were to come, she thought, upon seeing the Vishnu form, he would immediately kill the child. But if he saw a human form, he might reconsider. Devaki was afraid of Ugrasena Atmaja. That is, she was afraid not of Ugrasena and of his men, but of the son of Ugrasena. Thus, she requested the Lord to dissipate that fear, since he is always ready to give protection, abhayam, to his devotees. My Lord, she prayed, I request you to save me from the cruel hands of the son of Ugrasena, Kamsa. I am praying to your Lordship, please rescue me from this fearful condition, because you are always ready to give protection to your servitors. The Lord has confirmed this statement in the Bhagavad Gita by assuring Arjuna, you may declare to the world, my devotee shall never be vanquished. While thus praying to the Lord for rescue, Mother Devaki expressed her motherly affection. I understand that this transcendental form is generally perceived in meditation by the great sages, but I am still afraid because as soon as Kamsa understands that you have appeared, he might harm you. So I request for the time being you become invisible to our material eyes. In other words, she requested the Lord to assume the form of an ordinary child. My only cause of fear for my brother Kamsa is due to your appearance, my Lord Madhusudan. Kamsa may know that you are already born. Therefore, I request you to conceal this four-armed form of your lordship, which holds the four symbols of Vishnu, namely the conch shell, the disc, the club, and the lotus flower. My dear Lord, at the end of the annihilation of the cosmic manifestation, you put the whole universe within your abdomen. Still, by your unalloyed mercy, you have appeared in my womb. I am surprised that you imitate the activities of ordinary human beings just to please your devotee. Devaki was so afraid of Kamsa that she could not believe that Kamsa would be unable to kill Lord Vishnu, who was personally present. Out of motherly affection, therefore, she requested the Supreme Personality of Godhead to disappear, although because of the Lord's disappearance, Kamsa would harass her more and more, thinking that the child born of her was hidden somewhere. She did not want the transcendental child to be harassed and killed. Therefore, she requested Lord Vishnu to disappear. Later, when harassed, she would think of him within her mind. translation. My Lord, because you dispel all the fear of your devotees, I request you to save us and give us protection from the terrible fear of Kamsa. Your form as Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is appreciated by yogis in meditation. Please make this form invisible to those who see with material eyes. Om Agyanti Mirandasya Yananjana Chalakaya Chakshurum Militam Jena Tasmoy Sri Guru Ve Namaha. Often sing the beautiful song by the great Govinda Kaviraj. Bajahure mana Srinandanandana Abhaya charanara bindure Tulabamanava Chanama satsange Taraha ehe babo sindure Vajahure mana Srinandanandana Abhaya charanara vindare. Prayer to the mind. But please, always keep yourself in remembrance of the loving service of Divine Son of Nanda Maharaj. Because in that remembrance of Sri Nandanandana, one becomes fearless of Abhayam. This world is a place of misery, predominantly because we are always under the umbrella of Bhayam, or fear. Fear is the greatest misery in material existence. And we can understand that of the four animal propensities, eating, sleeping, mating, and fearing, fearing is the most prominent, because it all underlies all others. When you are eating, when you are endeavoring to get food to eat, fear is underlying it. Because if you do not get that food, you will starve. So therefore, people are motivated to work hard to eat out of fear. Similarly, sleeping. People work very hard to have a nice palatial building, a house, an apartment, a nice place for sleeping. Why? They're motivated essentially out of fear that if they do not have this protection, they will suffer. And as far as mating, fear is the name of the game in mating. When we have a wife or a husband, when we have children, there's always the fear they will leave us, they will be hurt, they will die, they will not be properly cared for. So in this way, human life is motivated primarily out of fear. People are very anxious for security. People work their whole life to create a feeling of security. Security at the present moment, and after they retire, they want to think, that my wife, my children, myself, we will be well cared for. And even after they die, they want to leave behind an estate which will give security to those who are near and dear to them? Out of fear. Out of fear, what will happen if they do not have? So many times children, when they love their parents, they pray to God, please do not let my parents die. If they love a dog, please do not let my dog die. This is fear. This anxiety of fear is underlying every aspect of material life. And it's the primal motivation. What is lust? Lust is an insatiable desire. Now, why are people so much anxious to acquire the objects of sense gratification? Actually, it's out of fear. Fear, if I don't get it now, I will not be satisfied. Huh? So factually, fear is all-pervading in this material existence. And it is explained by Govindadas, my dear mind, this whole world, which is bhayam, full of fear, ultimately, it is martyaloka. It is ultimately a place of death, and death can come at any moment. And death means losing everything I've worked so hard for throughout my life. So therefore, everyone is afraid of death, directly or indirectly. But one, fear is born of the mind. And one who keeps his mind on the immortal, on the eternal, becomes free from all fear. Such a person becomes abhayam, fearless. As long as our mind is attached to anything temporary, it will be full of fear. And as soon as the mind fixes itself on what is eternal, there is no fear. There is no anxiety. What is the difference between Kunta and Vaikunta? This material world is Kunta. Because everything in this material world, all manifestations are temporary, therefore it is a place of anxiety because it's a place where fear is underlying everything. But Vaikuntha, because it is the Satchit Ananda Loka, it is the eternal world where nothing is temporary, there is no fear. Without fear, there is no anxiety. Vaikuntha. So one who keeps his mind on the lotus feet of Sri Krishna, such a person is free of all anxiety and has no fear. Here we have in this verse something very wonderful to try to analyze and understand. Devaki and Vasudev, how much their minds were fixed on Krishna. In their previous birth, as Prishni, Sutapa, they performed so many long, long years of tapasya. They renounced all the temporary things of this world. They were simply eating dry leaves that would fall from the trees, living in the forest, wearing nothing but the tree bark. They were completely fixing their mind on Krishna, on Lord Narayan, through the whole testing austerity for so many thousands of celestial years. Obviously, they were fearful people keeping their mind fixed on the eternal. And they were given the benediction that Lord Narayan would himself take birth as their son. And throughout so many years, when they heard the benediction on that fateful day of their wedding, that the eighth child will kill you, Kamsa, they could understand that the eighth child will be Krishna. Therefore, they were willing to have six children. They were willing to witness these six children ruthlessly, cold-bloodedly murdered before them, because they understood But this is our service. We must, whatever happens to our children, that is in Krishna's hands, but we must continue to have children until this eighth child who is going to be Krishna is born. He wants us to have eight children. If we do not, he will not take birth in the world, so we must assist him. So however much we are attached to this children, however much pain it causes us to see them die, we are willing to tolerate it for Krishna's mission. So you can understand, throughout these many years in the prison cell of Kamsa, they were simply having their mind fixed on Krishna. And then Krishna was within her womb. She became the very abode, the holy dham of the Lord. The demigods were gathered around to offer prayers and obeisances. And alas, when Krishna was finally born from her womb, he appeared as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, decorated with the four symbols of Narayan. So in this way, Vasudeva and Devaki, their minds are 100% engrossed in the lotus feet of Krishna. Vajahure mana sri nanda nandana abhayat sharanara vindare. They were the personification of this verse. So why? Is it a contradiction? Their minds were completely immersed in the remembrance of Krishna, in the service of Krishna, in meditation on Krishna. But here Devaki is explaining that I am very afraid. How can there be fear? Fear is born of darkness. Darkness cannot exist in the presence of the light, the sun. Krishna is the supreme sun. Krishna Surya Sam Maya Haya Andakar Yahan Krishna Tahan Maya Radhikar. Where the sun exists, darkness cannot. Krishna's light, the sun, and Maya's darkness. Krishna says in the third canto of Bhagavatam that one who takes shelter of my lotus feet becomes so fearless that even fear personified is afraid of me. So what do you have to worry? So fear personified is afraid of Krishna, and Krishna, the shining sun, in his beautiful form of Narayan, which is unmistakably the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was right before Devaki, giving her personal audience. And what is her prayer? I request you to save us and give us protection from the terrible fear of Kamsa. How is it that the darkness of fear is existing in the presence of the divine light of Krishna? Srila Prabhupada is explaining very nicely that the nature of her fear was not material. It was eternal, because it was seated in an attitude of loving service to the Lord. It was actually Krishna's causeless mercy that under the spell of Yoga Maya, although Narayan, in his majestic form as the Lord of Vaikuntha, was right before her, she had the parental feelings that this is my son, this is my child. And I don't fear what happens to me, but I fear what happens to you. That Kamsa, I have seen how he has so ruthlessly killed six of my children. The seventh, by some inconceivable arrangement, was a miscarriage and went somewhere else. But now, if he sees you in this beautiful form of Vishnu, he will know for certain that you are the enemy that he has been warned against. And he will come and he will try to harm you. He will try to kill you. She's explaining, I know you are the cause of all causes. I know you are the source of everything. I know you are the creator, maintainer, and destroyer of everything that exists. But still, you're my son. And as my son, I'm very much afraid that this Rakshasa demon will hurt you. So therefore, please make yourself invisible. Please conceal this divine form of yours. This is love. in the impersonalist school of philosophy, all of these human attributes, such as fear, such as longing, such as feelings of separation, they are all considered illusion or maya. And they are when the object of these feelings is something temporary. Therefore, the philosophy is jagan mitya, brahma satyam. There is no variegatedness. There is only one Brahman, truth. And therefore, any of these feelings are based on an illusion. They are based on maya. Therefore, to be completely indifferent and detached is the perfection of those who aspire after this impersonal conception of mukti. But we find that higher than that liberated state, beyond attachment to all material objects of the senses, there is a sphere, there is a realm of yogamaya in the spiritual world where all of these attributes are directed toward the eternal loving service of the Lord for the purpose of creating ananda, ecstasy. The Lord has three features, sat, chit, ananda. To understand the Brahman feature of the Lord, sat, is to understand his eternal nature. In that eternal nature, there is no variegatedness. There is no separation of identity between you and him, conscious. Therefore, these feelings, these human-like feelings that we experience in this world do not exist at all in that eternal realm of Brahmajyoti. But that is only partial realization of God. Sat, chit, and ultimately ananda. Ananda means the pleasure potency of the Lord. And in that pleasure potency, in order for there to be pleasure, there must be love. In order for there to be love, there must be reciprocation. Therefore, all of these feelings that we have in this world, which are imperfect, perverted reflections, are perfectly manifested in the spiritual hearts of those persons who have achieved such an ananda realization. We don't want to give up these feelings. We want to purify them. We don't want to give up lust or anger or pride or greed. We want to purify them. What does lust mean? To long for something. That's all lust means. A longing. Srila Prabhupada explains that the price of Krishna consciousness is the tears you shed longing for Krishna. So we want to purify that longing and make its goal Krishna. Similarly, greed. Greed is a terrible demon in our heart. We don't want to vanquish greed. We want to purify it. Rupa Goswami explains in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu that to be Krishna conscious, to be a pure devotee, you have to be greedy for Krishna and greedy for service to Krishna. Transcendental greed. Without that, you cannot be a good devotee. The greed is never for my own selfish interest. The greed is to serve others, to please Krishna, to surrender more and more to Krishna, to offer more and more to Krishna. The greed of giving in love. Prabhupada tells the story of the thief who was happened to be just going around looking for some place he could make a fortune. And he heard some sadhus reciting the Bhagavatam. And they were describing Krishna, just a baby child, how Mother Yashoda decorates him with beautiful golden jewelry, which has valuable jewels decorating. So he was thinking, a young child wearing this, this will be very easy to steal from him. And plus, they are saying that he just roams through the forest with other little boys. I will make a fortune very easily. So he went to Vrindavan. And through the whole time, he didn't want to forget what this child looked like. So he was constantly meditating. Oh, this child, he has lotus eyes. He has a peacock feather bedecking his head. He has beautiful complexion like a blackish rain cloud. He has lotus feet with pinkish soles. And he carries a flute in his belt. And he wears a dhoti that is like the color of lightning. And his jewels, oh, how beautiful, red rubies and lapis lazulis and diamonds and all these nice jewels. And in this way, he didn't want to forget the description, because then he might not find him. So the whole way he was walking, he was simply greedy, out of intense greed. He was meditating on finding Krishna. And that because the object of his greed was Krishna, by the time he came to Vrindavan and met Krishna, he fell at his lotus feet and surrendered everything. He said, I don't want to take anything from you. I simply want to give you my life. I am your eternal servant. So whatever our natural propensities are, don't try to destroy them. Try to purify them by putting them in the direction of Krishna's lotus feet. Anger. We find so many instances of the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself became very angry to protect the devotees. Similarly, we find great devotees, great acharyas, how they become very angry in the service of Krishna to try to help others, to try to impress a point. Hanumanji, Arjuna, in order to fight the war, they had to become fiercely angry. This is purified anger, because there was no selfish motivation. It was not due to frustrated desires. It was simply to increase their service. So this is Satchit Ananda. The bliss of the realization of bhakti is when all of these natural emotions are simply utilized as an offering for the pleasure of Sri Krishna in the service of our Guru Maharaj. So here Devaki is showing a realization far more than complete detachment. If Krishna was born of her and she said, oh, nothing to worry about, your God, let Kamsa do whatever he wants, that would not be so imbued with love as the way she's feeling here. My dear Lord, I am your mother, and a mother must be always afraid for her child. So please, make yourself invisible. In the Leela of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there is also many similar instances. When Lord Gaur Hari was just a little child, he was doing all mischievous things. And his father was afraid that if he does these mischievous things, he will grow up to be a bad boy. So I must sometimes reprimand him, sometimes punish him, sometimes spank him, sometimes scold him. So one day, a very, very learned Brahmin saint appeared to him in a dream and said, Jagannath Mishra, don't you know that your son is the Supreme Bhagwan? He is Narayan. He is the original form of Krishna, the creator of this entire existence, the source of Mahavishnu. He's the cause of all causes. He's all that is. And you are chastising him. You are scolding him. You are punishing him. You are spanking him. Don't you see what an offense this is? Jagannath Mishra say, maybe what you're saying is right. Maybe he is all these things. But he's my son. And if I don't teach him properly how to behave, who will teach him? Although he realized that he was God, that was secondary to the feeling of love that he had as a parent. So this is the same sentiment as Devaki. She was not afraid for herself. She was afraid for Krishna. She was afraid that there would be some inconvenience or some harm upon Krishna. This is love. And actually, if Krishna Prabhupada describes in purport, if Krishna were to disappear as she wants, she'll be in more trouble. As far as for her own sake, if Krishna appears, and then Kamsa comes and kills it, then the eighth son is dead. Then there's no fear of Devaki anymore. He'll let her go. Go. I don't have to fear you anymore. He's dead. The benediction has been nullified by my strong hands. So for herself, the best thing they could have done, Krishna would have stayed there and Kamsa would have killed. For her own sense of enjoyment, for her own security in this world, from the material point of view, that is correct. So why is she telling Krishna to be invisible? By telling Krishna to become invisible, she knew that Kamsa would have such wrath. He will be so angry that he would further persecute and torture them. But she didn't mind. For Krishna's protection, I'm willing to die a million times. For Krishna's protect, I'm willing to remain in this jail cell, in this dungeon for the rest of my life. That was her fear. Her fear was selfless. It was the fear of divine love. And this is the glory of Devaki. And of course, when she is asking Krishna in the next verse, Janmate mayaso papo ma vidyan madhusudana samudvijay bhavad deto kam sam aham adhiradhi. O Madhusudan, because of your appearance, I am becoming more and more anxious in fear of Kamsa. Therefore, please arrange for that sinful Kamsa to be unable to understand that you have taken birth from my womb. Purport. Devaki addressed the Supreme Personality of Godhead as Madhusudan. She was aware that the Lord had killed many demons like Madhu, who were hundreds and thousands of times more powerful than Kamsa. Yet because of affection for the transcendental child, she believed that Kamsa could kill him. How could she believe that if she knew he was Madhusudan, who killed such great demons as Madhu, who were far greater than Kamsa? How could she still believe that Kamsa would kill? It was Krishna in her heart who was creating that belief only to increase the quality of her love as a mother. She was aware that the Lord had killed many demons like Madhu, who were hundreds and thousands of times more powerful than Kamsa. Yet because of affection for the transcendental child, she believed that Kamsa could kill him. Instead of thinking of the unlimited power of the Lord, she thought of the Lord with affection, and therefore she requested the transcendental child to disappear. So this is the nature of divine love. And it is also the process of coming to this divine platform of divine love. That whatever we have, whatever natural feelings we have acquired, simply learn how to dovetail them, how to direct them in the selfless, loving service of Sri Krishna. This is the path of bhakti. Is there any questions?
Is it right to say that material fear increases forgetfulness of Krishna and spiritual fear increases love of Krishna?
Yes. But we must also define what is material fear and what is spiritual fear. Srila Prabhupada, in his role as an acharya, would oftentimes offer personal prayers to the Lord just to show us the way. Srila Bhaktipada tells us that one time when he was with Srila Prabhupada in Boston, in his personal quarters, with his beautiful deities of Radha and Krishna, He was simply meditating on the beautiful form of the Lord, and he said to Bhaktipada, he said, I am simply playing to Radha and Krishna, that I never forget them and fall into Maya. So this type of fear will keep us from ever falling into Maya. We should be afraid to ever forget Krishna. The only fear a devotee has is that he may forget Krishna. Let anything happen. As long as I'm remembering you, my Lord, I am perfectly situated. You can take away everything, you can give everything, whatever you want to do, but just let me remember you. That is my only fear. So therefore, that type of fear will always keep us in Krishna's lotus feet. Even in Goloka Vrindavan, the gopis are always afraid Krishna's going to leave. What is that fear? That fear only increases their feelings of love. That imminent feeling of separation is a type of fear. Vipralamba Seva. But material fear is based on attachment to the temporary objects of the senses. So until one is actually thoroughly detached from material life, real transcendental fear will not awaken in his heart. But in our state now, where we have so many fears, we have to learn to dovetail and fear the right thing. Don't try to give up fear, but try to fear the right thing. You can't just extinguish fear. So fear, my Lord, let me never forget you. Let me never fall down and disappoint you again. That should be our fear. Let me never offend the devotees. Just like our mother Hrishikesh. She died by being murdered in one of the African countries just recently. And just perhaps a few weeks before she left her body, she knew the situation. She wrote a letter to me. In this letter, she was describing the situation, how this country, how all foreigners were being asked to evacuate immediately because thousands of people were being cold-blooded killed every day in the streets. She was seeing people being killed all the time. It was a government takeover. She said, at any minute, the devotees could be killed. I don't know if I will survive. Plus, I have malaria, and I'm very weak, and I can't travel. And after describing on and on and on and on about all the terrible conditions and fearful situations of life and death, she said, I am not afraid of any of these things. I only have one fear in my life. The only fear I have is that I may offend a Vaishnava. Whether I live or die makes no difference to me. But to offend a Vaishnava, that I am terribly afraid of. That is transcendental consciousness. That is transcendental fear. Is there any other yes?
Even thinking something bad about Vaishnava also becomes an offense.
Yes. There are three types of offenses. There's mental offense, verbal offense, and physical offense. But in Kali Yuga, our mental offenses are not held so much against us. If it is out of our control, if we're deliberately pondering upon it, then it's just a matter of time till it must come out as a verbal or physical offense. You cannot hold it in. But if you're mentally offensive, but you understand that this is a terrible thing, and you become afraid of that offense, and you really try to rectify it in your heart by taking shelter of Krishna, then actually you'll make advancement in that situation. But if you ponder on it, if you relish it, if you nourish it, then it will, that mental offense will create the ruination of your spiritual life. Because ultimately, you are responsible for what you say, and you are responsible for what you do. And what is in your mind must come out in your words and actions in due course of time. Unless we are striving very sincerely to overcome it.
How do you react in a situation where you are a Vaishnava who criticizes another Vaishnava?
You should go away. You should do one of two things. The Vedas say three things, but we only recommend two things. According to the Vedas, you should kill him, you should cut out his tongue, then you should kill yourself. But don't do that. Because this is a preaching movement, and that people will not be attracted if our devotees are doing like this. But that's to the extent that Vedas explain it's a serious disturbance to your spiritual life. So therefore, the two alternatives you have is you must defeat that person and change his dialogue, or you must go away. If you don't have the power and the potency to defeat that person in his criticism, if you do not go away, your spiritual life will be blemished. You must go away. You must say, I'm sorry, but I've come to this movement. You're a devotee, all respects to you, but I've come to this movement to glorify Krishna and his devotees. I could associate with any karmi person and have a discussion like this. Therefore, my dear Prabhu, I want nothing to do with you unless you're positively glorifying Krishna and his devotees. Don't ruin my spiritual life in this way. My Guru Maharaj has forbidden me from hearing this from you or anybody else. So Hari Bol, and you go away. Huh? And if you're not bold enough to say that, just say, I have to go. But go, whatever it takes. You must flee. You should, if you saw a cobra standing before you with his hood raised and his fangs shining, and he was ready to bite you, what would you do? You would run away. Huh? Well, I'll tell you something. That cobra is not even one lack of a fraction as dangerous as a devotee who's blaspheming another devotee. Because the most a cobra can do is kill this body, which has to die anyway, and you take up where you left off spiritually. But hearing the criticism of devotees is like a cobra who has the potency to put his fangs and inject his venom in your very heart and soul. Huh? Which is more dangerous? You should be more afraid of hearing the criticism or speaking the criticism of Vaishnavas. You should be more fearful than that than you are fearful of being thrown into a pit of thousands of cobras. Yes?
The government is trying to take even our property of complete. Is that going to purify their consciousness?
Indirectly, yes. Like Kamsa. They're like Kamsa. Actually, they're fortunate. They're going to have to suffer terribly, hellish consequences. But in the end, after all their hellish consequences of suffering, because they've thought of Krishna, they're actually Krishna conscious, but they're unfavorably Krishna conscious. Kamsa had to suffer. He was Krishna conscious, but because he was unfavorable, he had to suffer his whole life. He was totally in fear. He was total anxiety. He could not enjoy anything. And ultimately, he was beaten to death by Krishna. So he had to endure uncomprehendable pain, but in the end, he was liberated. So these people also, because of their offenses, they are going to have to suffer terribly. But in the end, after all that suffering is gone, however much they were thinking of Krishna is going to be their great asset.